Chapter 12.
Days have passed since her dalliance on Coruscant, and Grand Admiral Ray Sloan feels stuck in a waiting pattern. The pressures of leading an empire have given her no time to take a side trip to Quan Chi, and she sees no way clear of the mire. Her last trip did not go unnoticed. She was able to deflect questions and criticism easily. After all, she is the operating military leader of the Galactic Empire, and many fear the power she wields. The men at this dinner table, however, do not seem to fear her at all. And that upsets her greatly, because they should. This, then, is Admiral Rax's vaunted Shadow Council. She sits at the narrow head of one side, and the opposing head of the table offers only an empty chair where Rax has promised to sit, though he has yet to make a proper appearance. The others dine, all of them watching one another, uncertain as to what this even is. They are suspicious of one another. They are dubious of the situation. Surely each of them fears, quite fairly, that at any point the ground beneath their chairs will suddenly open up and they will be evacuated into open space, or dropped down into the crushing walls of a garbage compactor, or devoured by some slavering creature. Problem is, none of them think she's the one to fear. They hardly give her a look. The empty chair at the other end of the table? Oh, they can't stop staring at that, can they? Idiots. The Shadow Council, as arranged around the table, consists of 5 Imperials, including herself. Next to her sits Brendel Hux, once Commandant of the Arcanus Academy. Mercurial Swift did his job and rescued the man, and she makes a mental note to get the bounty hunter paid for that work. Hux is a big, blustering, ego-fed pig. Gone a bit to pasture, that one. His gut strains at his buttons, his neck is fat, and his firm jaw has gone soft with an unshorn patchwork of facial hair. He looks haggard, lost, angry. Occasionally he seems to remember that this is a dinner, then dives down into his meal with sudden gusto, shoveling food into his mouth once more. To his right sits Grand Moff Rand, special governor of the exterior. A far-flung slice of the Outer Rim, and the only true Outer Rim sector remaining under Imperial control. His distance from the action explains his survival. The war burned bright across the galaxy, claiming the lives of many of the Empire's most elite members. Rand was not one of those members. He, like many, was at the edges. And those at the edges were, and are, survivors. Sloan counts herself among those survivors. She had been pushed so far from center that her marginalization likely saved her. Rand has the rigidity and the pointedness of a needle. He moves nothing but his eyes. His hands lie flat against the table, and he has not eaten a single bite. Prudent, that. Perhaps he thinks it's poisoned. Or maybe his nerves are just so jangled he cannot contemplate the idea of food. Across the table, General Hodnar Borum, though nobody calls him that. His nickname is the Old Man, because of how long he served the Empire. Hod Borum actually served the original Republic under Chancellor Palpatine. It was he who reportedly led the charge against the last stand of the Jedi at the close of the Clone Wars, personally marshaling clone troopers against the mountain fortress of... what was it? Her history training is suddenly failing her. Madar? Morad? Oh, it matters not. Point is, he's a veteran in the truest sense. And she, among others, always wondered why Kenner Loring was made Grand General instead of Hod Borum. Some said he was too old. Others said he was too practical, and he was known for making a show of how little regard he gave the Force, which likely enraged Vader. Borum is old, and his cheeks are marked with deep lines, craggy craters and dark liver spots. But his eyes are still flinty. They are not clouded over with the fog of age. Those are a young man's eyes. A predator's stare looks back. Last up is her favorite, Ferrick Obdur, imperial propagandist extraordinaire. He's the only one who looks happy to be here. Nobody is talking. She decides that has to change. Sloane says to Hux, "I'm glad we got you off Arcanus."
"Yes."
He pauses, looking down at the hunk of steaming meat at the end of his fork. He sets it down with a clatter, as if suddenly not hungry.
"I suppose I am too."
"You suppose?"
"The Academy was my life's work. I was good at it. The best of the Empire came out of Arcanus. The very best. And now what?"
"Now we pick ourselves up," Rand says. "We fight back."
Ferrick Obdur gestures with his own cutlery, as if to make a point. Around a mouthful of food, he says,
"We show the rest of the galaxy how it's done, and why we are needed."
With the serrated knife in hand, he points it at Sloane.
"Admiral, you have a good story about that. You should all listen, because when Sloane was a girl... Well, go on, Admiral, you tell it."
Her face burns with the sudden attention of the whole table. The propagandist is both correct and obviously playing an angle here, though she's not sure what it is. Either way, she does have a story. A bad childhood on a lawless world, and the Empire swooping in to bring order to chaos. She's about to speak and tell that tale when Hux interrupts.
"These are dark days. Dark days for all of us."
Sloane bristles at being interrupted. Hux undercuts her because he thinks she's not important. It is vital she make a show of countermanding that. Honestly, her greatest desire right now is to slam her fork through the back of his hand and chastise him for the intrusion. But that would defy Rax, and she's aware suddenly of the keen and delicate balance of power. Instead, she does her own brand of undercutting. "Brendel," she says, "I understand you have a son. Not of your wife, an illegitimate child? Will he be the best the Empire has to offer?" That is a stab from a double-sided dagger. First, the fact that he has an illegitimate son. And second, the inference that no matter how good the cadets at his academy became, they still weren't enough to save the Empire from its fate. His eyes pinch and blink, as if he were just slapped.
Armitage is a weak-willed boy. Thin as a slip of paper and just as useless. But I'll teach him. You'll see. He has potential."
Around the table, the others chuckle. A small victory, she thinks, but precious just the same. General Borum dabs at his mouth with a napkin.
"From a military perspective, we do have an interesting inversion here, don't we? We went from being the prominent power in the galaxy to being second. A far second, if the numbers hold. It happened fast, too, proving that the war machine breaks down with too many hits. But I find that many in the Empire still see us as the first and only law in the galaxy, when I wonder if it would be far better to face reality. We have lost that edge."
"I agree," Sloane says. "It's high time we regard our place in the galaxy with a full awareness unclouded by prejudice. And then it's time to act accordingly. We are the underdogs fighting to save the galaxy."
"Yes," Obdur says, clapping his hands. "That's exactly it, isn't it? We are the rebellion. We're the resistance. Oh, yes."
He laughs somewhat madly.
Think of it this way. Truth is given to us in two stages. All of this, everything anyone ever does, is only as true as the stories we tell about it. The narrative is the thing. We have to control the narrative. We can be the ones to swoop in and save troubled worlds dwelling in the shadow of the New Republic's ignorance. We put out the message. We control it politically, and then we enforce the narrative militarily, not the reverse. Too often, we lead with aggression and then try to tell the story afterward. I say no. I say we get our story straight and then use what's left of our war machine to hammer that story into the hearts and minds of the galaxy and its people.
And what story would that be?
Grand Moff Rand asks, his tone crisp, clipped, and sharply uncertain.
What is our narrative?
That showman's smile from Obdur when he explains.
It is exactly as Sloane said. We are the underdogs. Everyone loves an underdog. So we lean into that, not away from it. We play the wounded animal. The loyal hound who has been kicked out by a brutal, unjust, and altogether unready father.
From the back of the room comes a gentle applause. A sound that grows more insistent as it gets closer. And from the dark outside the dining table comes the fleet admiral himself, Gallius Rax. It surprises her not at all that this is when he chooses to emerge. It's the most dramatic moment, isn't it? There sits Ferrick, giving his speech about narrative and story, and oh, how closely it mirrors Rax's feelings about artifice and the ephemeral, uncertain nature of truth.
This, Rax begins, is precisely why I have selected you all. Such good ideas, such impeccable wisdom. The truth of the matter is, we have lost this war. The Empire, as we knew it, is gone. Already we were letting it slip when the Rebel Alliance grew in unseen spaces like a cancer.
Discomfort manifests around the table as those seated shift in their chairs.
For us, this represents an opportunity to reshape ourselves. That is why I have gathered you all here. A veritable brain trust of the first and most vital among us. It is on us to retake and control the narrative.
In his hand, he gestures with what looks to be a small controller.
What will our story be? What or who is the Empire?
Hux leans in, desperation glinting in his eyes.
And how exactly do we retake our story? Propaganda is all well and good, but we still need resources. It's not the narrative we're losing, it's people and ships and...
Here he looks to General Borum.
And vehicles on the ground.
A slow, chilling smile settles across Rax's face. Then he hits a button. From a centerpiece in the table, hidden from view, a HoloLens projects images all around them, above them, behind them, everywhere. What it shows is galactic space, stars and systems, clouds and hyperspace routes. It is not one map, but several slices of the overall galaxy.
It is time, Rax says, to expose my ruse.
He hits a button again. The air shifts and shimmers, and now they're looking at thick interstellar clouds. Nebulae. Like the one they're hiding in right now. The Vulpinus. Sloane knows her galactic map well. As a naval officer, it would do her little good to be ignorant of the stars. She spies five known nebulae. The red clouds of the Almagest. the bruised dark striations of the Recluse's Nebula, the sapphire orb of the Quel'Yuhan, the spiraling Rolu Triangle, and the bleak columnar plumes of the Inamorata. What ruse will he expose? The truth of it reaches her before he speaks. Just as they are hiding in one nebula, so too are other fleets. They are not alone out here. They are not the last fleet. Rax confirms exactly that.
Portions of our naval fleet have been hidden since not long after the destruction of our glorious battle station over the Endor Moon. These fleets are not as large as the one we currently control here in the Vulpinus. Yet they are substantive just the same. Hundreds of star destroyers, thousands of smaller craft.
Sloane is left reeling. She feels gutted, like a dolo fish, its belly slit so that its steaming innards can lie on the dock while it gasps in the open air. Even now, her lips work soundlessly in the same way. She tries to find words, tries to find something. She should be happy, shouldn't she? That the Empire's demise is not so plainly written? But all she feels is disappointment and anger, a red, rising anger. She's about to erupt. And then Rax says,
Admiral Sloane and I felt it was necessary to maintain this ruse. We simply did not know who to trust.
A second blow. He included her in the conspiracy. A conspiracy she literally just learned about alongside the rest of the Shadow Council. They're staring at her. Betrayal in their eyes. But something else, too. Admiration. That sickens her the most. They admire the plan he created, and she has been given undue credit for it. Why? Why did he do that to her? All she can do is grit her teeth and nod. Exposing him now would seem untoward. Worse, it would show him for being someone gracious enough to give credit to an inferior and reveal her as unappreciative of a bone thrown in her direction.
But I want more than just a bone, she thinks. I want the whole damn animal.
That is the only way the Empire will be kept safe and strong. Its leash held firmly in her grip. Now is not that time. Instead, she sucks it up and leans into it. She says, summoning a swell of false confidence,
With Palpatine's demise, it was clear that some factions within the Empire would attempt to wrest control. Pantheon was an excellent example of this. A greedy man using the chaos to extend his reach. Further, we had no way of knowing who would attempt to save their own skins by running to the New Republic. We had to be sure that we revealed this to those vital few we could trust. That's all of you.
Now admiration shines at her from a different set of eyes, from Gallius Rax himself. The corner of his lip is twisted up in a mischievous hook as he regards her.
He is pleased with me, she thinks.
It warms her and chills her at the same time.
The fox is pleased with the hen.
Is she falling for his strange way? Does she admire him now? She might. Even as she hates him, she admires him too.
We need more than fleets, Borum says. We need boots on the ground, and the armor to go with him.
Good news, then, Rax answers. The factories of Kuot have been bombed into submission, and the shipyards of Jar Fel, Anadin, and Turok Prime are all either contested or already lost. But the Outer Rim will be our savior, and it will be the strangling cord we tie around the neck of the New Republic. We already have three worlds under our sway there. Jadaline, Corus, and Beladun. The Empire has long, to its detriment, relied on third-party corporations to produce the pieces of our war machine. but that is no longer the case. Production is entirely Imperial. And on these worlds, we have already begun to produce our weapons. All-terrain walkers, new TIE starfighters, E-11 rifles, and the other necessities of war. Hux sits stunned.
We still need personnel. We need new academies.
In due time, Rax says sharply.
Sloane is so busy watching the reactions of the men at the table to this news, spying the competing emotions of relief and fear and rage on these men's faces, that she fails to notice someone else come into the room. Someone who steps up behind her and places a gentle hand on her shoulder. She startles as Adia whispers,
"Admiral, we have a situation."
A hot flash of anger rises in her, and for a moment she's about to chastise the poor girl in front of everyone. But that won't do. It isn't earned. Sloane is on edge, and if Adia says that a situation demands her attention, then she must trust it to be true. It takes every ounce of willpower to get up from that table. Excluding herself from the meeting, even for 1 second, will make her feel robbed of information. And in this empire, information is power.